And welcome back to the Oscar Rewind. This is our first official podcast as we discuss two films from the 2011 Oscars. And to break these two films up with me is my co-host, the wonderful, beautiful Andrea Tennis, who is very excited to be here.
Yes, I am super pumped to talk about these two great movies and how we felt about them and which outweighs the other.
That's right. If you missed the intro podcast, you didn't miss much. We just randomized which year we are going to be discussing for our first set of podcasts, and it's going to be the 2011 Oscars, otherwise known as the 10 films that were nominated from 2010. And the two movies we're going to be discussing this week, as you will see in the title, is 127 Hours and Toy Story 3. Which might seem like a weird combination, but they're kind of the two outliers of the Academy for this year. 127 Hours, a very simple story about some true events, and Toy Story 3, the second, I believe, no, third animated film to ever be nominated for Best Picture. So kind of the two outliers here, so we're kind of getting the two rascals out of the way, so to speak. Andrew, what were your two thoughts on these two films?
Well, I absolutely loved 127 Hours. I am a sucker for true stories, so the fact that it was a true story kind of had already won me over. I'm surprised that I had never watched this before. This is the first time I had ever watched this film, and it blew my mind that it's basically shot in almost the exact same area the whole time, and it was just this good. Like, the whole storyline was great, but like you said, it was so simple. It blew my mind. And Toy Story 3, you know, I'm really glad I rewatched this. I had watched this a long time ago, and I was not the biggest fan of Toy Story 3, mostly because I don't really like the villain in it. What's his name?
The Lotso Huggenbear.
Yes, him. I don't know. I think he's a big jerk. But anyway, I'm glad that I rewatched it because I actually feel like I liked it a little bit more this time around. The plot was good, and I loved how it ended.
Yes. How dare the villain be villainous? That's right.
I know. I know. Terrible.
Doesn't make any sense. What's wrong with the world? So you kind of jumped the gun here. That was going to be my next question of, have you seen these films before? Do you have any recollection of Toy Story 3? How old were you when you first watched it?
Honestly, yeah. I don't remember. I don't feel like I watched it whenever it first came out because, I don't know, my family just wasn't on top of movies like that. Yeah. So it was probably a year or so after they had actually been out and like was popular, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, because if I remember correctly, up until maybe 8 months ago, if I even mentioned an animated film, Andrew would be like, a kid's movie? What? A movie for children? This is insane. Why would I watch that when I can watch Little Woman? So Andrew was very anti animated films. So I'm not surprised. The last time you watched it, you didn't like it.
Little exaggerant there. It wasn't quite that bad. And I didn't say all animated movies are kids' movies. I think that's what you wanted to hear.
Yeah. So when we finished recording the intro last week or so, I put everything down. Andrew looks at me and goes, so we have to watch that Toy Story movie again? And I was like, Andrew, come on. You don't like animated movies? I'm sure you'll like it this time around. You're going to love it. I don't even know if you've seen this one. Do we know this is the Toy Story movie you've seen? And she's like, it's the one with that stupid pink bear. And I was like, whoa, she does. She has seen this and she does not like it. But I think we can gladly say she enjoyed it a lot more this time.
Yeah, and I was probably really young when I watched it as well. I don't know, but I definitely enjoyed the villain a little bit more this time around, and I really liked the ugly baby, creepy baby, not sure what it's called.
It's called Creepy Baby. You know,
okay, I did get it right. I really liked Creepy Baby, but mostly because I felt bad because the bear, like, brainwashed the baby. It was sad.
We're committed now. We're going to call it Creepy Baby for the rest of the podcast.
Wait, what is it actually called?
It's called Creepy Baby.
No, it's not. I don't have my phone, so I can't Google it.
Yeah, so for me, I've seen both these films before.
Or was it Naked Baby?
You know what, Ange? It's Creepy Baby. We're sticking to it, all right? So... I'll tell you right now, Andrea, without a doubt in my mind, I don't think Disney would have been allowed to have a character named Naked Baby. I just don't think that would be allowed. So we're going to stick with Creepy Baby.
It was naked. It's not like I'm trying to be a
It's not
perv.
Naked. It's got clothes
it
on.
It did not have clothes on.
It had like
if
a
you
diaper.
Count tattoos.
It had a diaper on. It had a diaper on. You were not watching a baby naked. I don't know what you were watching,
it
Andrea.
It was naked.
Baby. The first time you watched this, maybe it was from some adult site.
Oh
but
my god.
We watched the official Disney one on Disney Plus, and the one we saw did have a diaper on.
God.
But yeah, my experience with Toy Story 3, I think I'm one of those generic. I'm with the masses here. I grew up with Toy Story. My family is a huge Disney family. So any film that we watch during these Best Picture podcasts that has anything to do with Disney, I have definitely seen it at least 5 times. But Toy Story 3 has always been the one that I just really love. I do love this film. And every time I watch it, I think I like it more and more, just a little bit. And, you know, well, we'll get more into it there. But I've always really had a soft spot for Toy Story 3. Even Lotso, when I was a little kid, after watching the movie, I thought Lotso was the best. I thought he was such a badass villain. That for Christmas, I asked my parents to get me a Lotso teddy bear, and I got one. It's probably somewhere in my parents' place if they haven't thrown it out yet. But yeah, I had a Lotso teddy bear. I thought he was such an awesome villain. My second favorite Pixar villain. I really love him. And 127 Hours was kind of the opposite story. I watched it once, and this is one of the reasons why I picked the 2011 Oscars as one of my choices when we did the randomization, and that's because I've seen most of these movies and I feel like I have some fun stories, because this was for some reason the year my mother just woke up one day. I don't know, maybe she woke up on the right side of the bed for once, and she just went, guys, we are officially movie critics, we love film, and we are gonna watch every film that's nominated for Best Picture this year. Now I didn't see some of them, but I watched most of these with my family. Because my mom wanted us to become, like, more fancy. Maybe she, like, met this employee from work who loves film. And she kind of wants to follow in her footsteps. I don't know. But all of a sudden, she just wanted us to watch all these prestigious films. Because we never watched something like 127 Hours before. And I remember watching this movie. This is the guy that watches Disney films and plays Mario. I was very sheltered as a kid. And I thought this guy cutting his arm off was the craziest thing I have ever seen in my life. I remember thinking this was a horrible movie. It was terrifying. And it's funny how this is my second time watching it. And man, this movie is much better than what I thought. It's a good film. So I guess we'll go through one film at a time here. Is there one in particular? Do you want to start with 127 Hours?
Yeah, let's just go ahead and start with that one.
Yeah, yeah, we'll go in alphabetical order. And also the order that we watched it. I guess that makes sense. But 127 Hours, we'll look at the Oscar presence it had for the year. It was nominated for 5 awards.
Ooh.
Adapted screenplay, music, score, editing, and lead actor. So quite a few big ones as well. Sorry, and also Best Picture, believe it or not. So it was nominated for 6. I forgot to count the big one. But yeah, so it was nominated for 6 awards here. Didn't win any. I believe this is one of the few that we're going to be talking about that just didn't win a single award. It was nominated for a bunch. Didn't get anything.
I'm shocked. I'm really shocked. This was such a well-done movie that the fact that it got none means these other nominees that did win them must have been outstanding.
Well, we're going to be talking about one of them in a little moment here. But yeah, 127 Hours. Didn't win anything. And it is kind of crazy because it was nominated for 6, but
that's a lot, too. 6 is a lot, right?
Oh, 6 is a lot.
Yeah.
during 2019, Parasite was nominated for 6. It got as many nominees as Parasite.
It was just opposite. Parasite won all its.
Yeah, it went 4 out of the 6. This won none. Yeah. So, yeah, they definitely had different nights.
Wow.
Both walked in with the same same amount of nominations. Both feeling, you know what, we got a few nominees, might win one. Won 27 Hours, won nothing. Parasite walked away with everything. So, yeah, definitely different nights, I'm sure. Yeah, it is upsetting that it didn't win any, because it is a great film. But at the same time, looking at these, is there one that you think it should actually win? Adapted, music, score, editing, lead actor, best picture?
At least 2. And I would have to see what the other nominees actually were, which I wish we had that. But for the lead, James Franco was amazing. He was outstanding. He's so good in character roles. Like, he can literally do anything that he wants to. He's just perfect. And he played this character that was so outgoing, independent, didn't ever tell anyone where he was. And then he's stuck in this situation where he's really fucked up. Because, like I said, he never tells anyone where he goes. And just, it was amazing. I was a huge fan of James Franco during this entire film. And then also, I remember watching it. I really liked the score.
Yeah.
The score was amazing. I believe whenever he finally got free, like, the music in the background was just, like, so triumphant. I really enjoyed that. So those were the 2 I could have saw it probably winning.
Yeah. Fortunately for us, during the trip we're going to be taking the next few months, we're going to be seeing 4 of the 5 lead actor nominees, so we'll be seeing 3 others. And at the end of this whole thing, when we announce our favorite film of the year, I think we might do the same for all the actor and maybe director and screenplay nominees. So we'll figure out who really should have won lead actor. And I think this is the one award 127 Hours has going for it. I do love the score for this film, and it might be my 2nd of the year. But there's definitely another nominee that we'll be getting to where that score, from my memory, was the best. It's an insane score.
Also, I wouldn't just add on, you said adapted screenplay. What is that again? Sorry.
So screenplay would be like the script of the film. And then there's adapted and original. So adapted means it's taken from a previous story. Obviously, this is based on a true story.
Right.
So it's an adapted screenplay. They took something that was already known and they retold a story from it. Toy Story 3 also got adapted screenplay because it's a sequel, right? They all already took characters we already know and told a story from that. Original is just a purely original storyline.
Okay, I see.
Social Network is based off of Mark Zuckerberg. That would be an adapted screenplay.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, I got it.
So, yeah, I think lead actor is definitely the biggest thing this film has going for it. I thought James Franco was insane. For one guy to pretty much just carry this entire film the way he does is really good. This is an hour and a half film of a guy just stuck between 2 walls with a rock on his arm, and James Franco can just carry the film purely on his acting. So it is really good. He had to carry this film, or else this would not be getting any nominations. The film's as good as it is because of what he was able to do. No, I really liked him. So, those of you that haven't seen 127 Hours, we probably have already spoiled a few moments here. But yes, it's basically James Franco going out on a trip. He's clearly a big adventure-seeking guy. Quite the opposite of Andrew and myself, who just sit in a bedroom and watch movies all day and talk about how awesome James Franco's character is for being adventurous. We're the newscasters talking about the newsmakers. That's our role here. We're nothing like him. But he's this guy that seeks adventure. I think the first few moments is great, just him interacting with these other 2. You know he's a great guy. He doesn't tell them where he's going. He doesn't tell anyone else where he's going. There's no way for them to contact him.
Yeah, it's even the fact that, like you said, he meets these 2 girls on the trail. he literally leaves them, and then 20 minutes later, he finds himself in the situation. Like, he could have been like, hey, I'm going over this way, and he didn't do that.
Yeah, and that's one of my favorite parts of this movie, is the use of flashbacks, and it's just us seeing through his memory, him trying to picture all these moments leading up to, obviously, this horrible accident, and he's just remembering not answering his mom calling him and not telling his buddy in the gas station where he's going, like all these little things. And in his head, he just keeps saying, just say where you're going so they know. But there's no way for them to know. And I think they tell the story in such a great way. The flashbacks, I think, is placed perfectly. I remember when he's about to get trapped, Andrea goes, wait, we're just gonna have him get stuck right now? Like, there's no buildup. And I was like, Andrea, I remember them doing flashbacks. I don't think we're just gonna be staring at a guy for the rest of the film.
Yeah, that was my biggest thing, is I felt like there, at first, there wasn't enough backstory. And now, looking back, I guess it made sense that they didn't have a huge backstory before he just kind of falls down this hole and gets stuck, because they made everything make perfect sense during the entire movie, and the flashbacks were probably my favorite part as well.
And I liked how they took this route, and the reason being, if they told all the flashbacks at the beginning, like if they showed him ignoring his mom's message and talking to his buddy, all this stuff at the beginning, that would be really powerful. That would, during all those moments, we know he's going to get stuck. We know what we're watching. We know what this is going to lead to. So that could have been powerful. But then 30 minutes into the hour and a half film is when he's going to get stuck. It's not going to feel like that was the entire film. But I felt like an hour and a half, he gets stuck about 15 minutes in. This is very, he gets stuck immediately. And it just makes the entire film feel that much longer. You feel like you're stuck in this boulder with him. Like, it feels like he's stuck there forever. And if they did all the flashbacks earlier, it might have felt like it wasn't that big of a deal. He was stuck there for a bit. No. The entire film is him being stuck. So you know it is painful what he's going through. So I thought that was great. Andrea, I guess we talked mostly about the story. Anything else we missed plot-wise?
No, not really. He's just literally going back and reliving everything. And then there's also an old girlfriend, someone that he was seeing that's in a lot of the flashbacks as well. And he feels bad because of how things ended. There was that. But besides that, that's mostly it.
Yeah, you really start to become thankful of just the little things. Mm-hmm. Just seeing him enjoy sticking his foot out just to get some sunlight for 10 minutes during the day. That's pretty powerful. You kind of think, oh yeah, I guess I haven't taken the sun for granted. I don't enjoy 10 minutes of the sun. Heck, I'm in my bedroom and I'm like hissing at the sun through my window, being like, get off my eyes, I'm trying to watch this movie. But you realize, yeah, you know what, maybe I should be a little nice to the sun. It's kind of nice that I can actually feel some sunlight. And when he's close to death and barely getting water, he has this image of all of his family on the couch, like just great images. And I actually find the imagery and the camera works and the editing, I'm really happy it's nominated for editing, but I feel like the film, in all these weird aspects, it feels like an A24 film, doesn't it? It felt like A24 before A24 even became a thing. I feel like the people behind A24 was watching this film go, oh, wow, we should make some mm-hmm. of those. Like, this was before A24 even existed.
Yeah, they do a lot of cool camera work. Yeah, like you said, the scene with the couch where literally all his family is just coming into the picture, his friends, everyone. It's really cool how they did that. So, yeah, I didn't even realize you said editing earlier, because the editing was fantastic on this film as well.
Yeah, it's very unique, to mm-hmm. say the least. And obviously the big moment where he cuts his own arm off, very visual. This is very A24-esque, where they do not shy away from showing you how painful and horrible this moment is. And it's good. They shouldn't show how painful that is. And then the loud noise that kind of blinds your ear, it's so uncomfortable, but I love it. You're not supposed to be comfortable. You're supposed to be feeling the pain he's feeling. And those loud rings were really effective. Might be one of my favorite moments. And speaking of that, Andrew, what do you think, if we haven't mentioned already, was your favorite scene or moment of this film, if you could pick one?
My favorite part, I really liked when he was making the video back to, like, his family, like, apologizing to his mom and his dad. It was just very moving. I don't know. That was one of my favorite parts. I really liked it. I really like the sappy, emotional parts of movies. But definitely the worst part to watch was when he actually sawed his arm off. I even put on my Letterboxd account for my review that I could never do that. I just would have died. Like, this guy is so tough and so brave. It blew my mind.
Oh, yeah. I definitely would just let myself die.
Yeah.
I would have finished that water within the first hour. I would my movie would have been called 6 hours.
Sam.
and at the end, I would have just been stuck there. But it's funny. You already jumped ahead of it. I was going to ask you what your least favorite part was as well. You're killing it here.
Whoa, I am a mind reader. Yeah. First podcast we have, and I already know all the questions.
Yeah, you're killing it. My favorite part, I don't know if it's the same one. I feel like we're touching on different moments, was also him recording the camera, but when he's doing his fake little news segment of him just on the camera making some jokes about his situation. He's pretending he's the host, and he's pretending that obviously he's the one being interviewed. And I love this moment for so many reasons. One, I think this is the best example of their editing. I thought the editing was amazing, how the recording through the camera lens is him personally talking. And then when he's the host, it's like a sideways camera where he's like, it's much brighter and happier because he's cracking some jokes as the fake host of this channel he's doing. And it's my favorite scene because it's him quickly glossing over all the times he didn't tell anybody about where he is, and they're making jokes about how screwed this guy is. And it's kind of like a exposition dump. The host in this interview is saying, "And wouldn't you say that it's going to take you're going to be officially missing in about 4 days?" And he's like, "Actually, yeah, it is about 4 days. And you only have about 2 days of water, is that correct?" Yes. 2 days, that sounds about correct. "So you would say you're screwed, right?" Yeah, I guess you're right. I would say that. That's hilarious. Like, it was like this fun new segment. It's so joyful. Maybe the only time I smiled during this horrible film. And it also kind of made the reality of this sink in. I felt like it did a lot for so little. I love that scene. Was that the same scene you were talking about, the camera work?
I was talking about one of the earlier scenes. So they were two different scenes.
Okay.
Mine was basically like where he was apologizing to his parents and everything.
Yeah. And my least favorite scene, I don't really got one. I really do like what this film did. But maybe my least favorite scene would be the jump scare Scooby-Doo moment where he hears something while it's during the nighttime. So he takes out his phone with the flash on, he takes a photo, but nothing's there. But then they have like this weird fake Scooby-Doo blowout as like a jump scare. Do you remember that?
Kinda.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I felt weird to throw a random jump scare in there. Not really a big deal. Cause I really do think a lot of this film was pretty effective. I'm with you here. I thought it was a really good film. So the final question here before we move on to your favorite film, obviously. we'll wrap up 127 hours here. Why do you think this film deserves or doesn't deserve to be nominated for Best Picture? Like, overall, do you think, you know what? Yeah, this should have been nominated for Best Picture. This
was
really well done.
So, overall, yeah, I think this did deserve to be nominated for Best Picture. I feel like they hit the nail on the head with a lot of the effects, the editing, even the music, everything that was going on. You know, everyone loves a true story. Something that's based on a true story will definitely pull the audience in. And, yeah, overall, James Franco, like we said, did an amazing performance. I definitely think this deserved to be nominated.
Yeah, I'm glad it's nominated. I really do love this movie. It's funny how we're talking about these two films, because I feel like they're like we said, the miscellaneous group, the ones that didn't really fit with other films. And I also feel like they're the miscellaneous films for this nomination group. There are two very out there films, you know, quote unquote, for Best Picture. These aren't the kind of films Oscar voters tend to like from my knowledge of the Oscars. And this is the second year they've done 6 to 10 nominees. So 2 years ago, they were only doing 5 nominees. And I don't think either of these would make the top 5. I think they both were blessed that we had a new top 5 Best Picture nominee film. Because I don't know if either of these would have actually made the final 5. Like I think they're kind of the ones that just barely squeaked by because we now have 10 films. And I think this is one of the reasons why I like that we have more than 5 films. Because I think these two should have been both nominated. And I think they're both great. So, you know, I guess that's one good thing about the large amount of nominees now. So we'll move on to Toy Story 3 here. Is there anything else you wanted to say about 127 Hours? Want to do a shout out to James Franco? Anyone?
Yeah, shout out to James Franco. You are amazing. Just wanted you to know.
Yes.
Anyway, continuing.
All right, so Toy Story 3. We'll be moving on to them here. And let's look at what they were nominated for this year in the Oscars. They were nominated for Adaptive Screenplay, Sound Editing, and Best Picture. And they won Music and Animated Feature. So this film won 2 Best Picture awards.
Wow. That's crazy. That's awesome, though. I'm not surprised they won animation. I mean, the animation was phenomenal in this movie. I loved everything they did with it, basically.
You kill me, though. You're like, wow, that's amazing. Like, what? Definitely sound a little disappointed. You're like, yay, Toy Story 3 won.
But wait, is music this... I guess it's probably because I was confused a little bit. Is music the same thing as, like, the score?
No.
Okay.
Like, 127 Hours was nominated for music and score. It's 2 separate awards.
Okay.
So they were both nominated for music. Toy Story 3 ended up winning. 127 Hours was also nominated for score. Toy Story 3 wasn't. So the difference is score is the background music, like you said, when he was walking out of the cliffs, or when he's walking out of the mountain range with his arm missing.
Right.
And there's this intense music. That would be the score, while the music would be like a song.
Okay.
Yeah. So... you know, a bit of a difference there.
That's fair.
So, Toy Story 3, I feel like this film, man, I feel like they really pack a lot. It's kind of different. But it's funny how we're talking about these two, because they're quite different in that 127 Hours is an hour and a half of a dude stuck with a rock on his arm. Doesn't really do much. You know, he's just stuck there. Nothing really happens. Toy Story 3 is toys who are supposed to be going to the attic because their owner, Andy, is moving on to college. And then, oh no, oh, we're going in the trash. Oh no, we escaped. Oh, we're going to daycare now. Oh no, the teddy bear Lotso that runs this place, he's like a mafia boss. And now we're all in cages. Ah, big escape route. Oh, we almost escaped, but Lotso's in the trash. Oh, now we're in the trash. Oh no, how do we escape? Oh, the alien saved us. Oh, wait a second. Now we're back in Andy's, but now he's giving us to this other girl, Bonnie. Oh, it's over. Like, it's just, I felt like so many things are happening in this film, which is quite different than the first two Toy Stories. Toy Story 1, you know, it's kind of like 127 Hours. You feel like your arm's stuck against a rock during this whole experience because it's just this, you know, it's just toys hanging out. Nothing really happens. Toy Story 2, someone gets kidnapped. Whoop, something kind of happens, but you know, nothing really. This one, I feel like everything's happening at once. Like, I felt like they had, like, 5 plot lines for Toy Story 3, and they went to the director of Pixar, and they went, okay, which plot line should we go with? And the director went, yes. Yes to all of them.
There, now that you bring that up, there was so much happening in this movie. I mean, it's been a while since I've seen Toy Story 1 or 2, so I don't 100% remember them probably fully, but yeah, Toy Story 3, everything's happening all at once.
Well, Lotso, the big teddy bear, isn't in the first two, so you'll probably like them.
Oh, probably. I bet I will. Definitely.
Yeah, the beginning really feels like just a great back-to-basics Toy Story film. And then we get to a heist scene where it's like a big escape film. And then, once again, we go back to this sad, depressing last 25 minutes. So I feel like there's really three stages of this film. And I feel like they kind of master each stage on its own. It's just as a whole, I'll admit, I still don't know how I feel with the pacing. I feel like the middle part with the escape route is so much different than Andy giving Bonnie his toys away, and just the feels about both, like, they both feel like completely different genres.
I absolutely love the last scene with Bonnie. I know we'll probably end up talking about that here in a little bit, but that had me crying. That was really moving to see Andy playing with her and explaining who all the characters were. It just makes me, like, tear up right now just even thinking about it. That was a really good scene.
Yeah, whatever complaint I have about this film, it's just thrown away. After that last scene, that might be one. You know what? Top of my head, might regret this, but I'm going to call it right now. I think that is the greatest scene in all of animated films. I can't think of an animated film that has a better single scene than Andy giving away his toys to Bonnie. That is the best scene. I don't think I have ever watched the film and not cried. To be fair, when I first, like the first few years when I watched it, when I was younger, I didn't cry. But now as an adult, all I do is cry during that scene. It is a total wreck. Andrea, I feel like, was embarrassed when she was watching me cry during that scene. I was just a fucking ball after that. Yeah.
Well, I was crying too, but yeah.
I couldn't even tell. I was too busy crying to even notice you crying. But obviously, the Bonnie scene, beautiful. It's amazing. But the rest of the film is great too. I think Lotso, as I've already said, is one of the greatest Pixar villains ever. I love him. I think he's amazing. I think all the characters they added are fun. Ken and Barbie are adorable. They're a total blast. I love how Barbie gets the information from Ken by tearing his clothes, because Ken just loves his clothes so much.
That was one of my favorite scenes too. I just love how Woody's the head of this big family. Wow. This is a child's movie. Shh. Sorry.
You're the one talking about heads, but sorry.
Wow. Whoa. All right. Anyway, so he's just, I don't know what else the word to use. Anyway, he's the head of the toy family. And he comes up with the plan to, like, get them out of there. I love that. And, yeah, then my second thing would definitely be Barbie ripping Ken's clothes. And I loved whenever Barbie went to go get the instructions from the little worm guy. And he sees the heels. And he just, like, shakes his head. That part was super humorous.
Yeah, they're so good. They're little jokes. I think we probably were robbed of more Mr. Potato Head and Ham, because they were two of my faves from the original Toy Story. I love them both. They're both great in this film as well. Mrs. Potato Head, I thought, really shined. She was fantastic. I thought her telling Lotso off, then him taking her mouth off, that was great. She's like, I got 1,000 accessories. You don't tell us what to do. Like, she's like, oh, do not mess with Miss Potato Head. Yeah. Every little character had their little moments. I really do love this film. Yeah, it's hard to really hate on a film. Mm-hmm. You know, both these are pretty dang good films. What would you say is your favorite scene/moment? Are you with me and it's the Bonnie scene?
Yeah, it would probably have to be the Bonnie scene. It was just so good, and it was just such a nice way to end the entire movie. It just flowed well.
Yeah, I would probably, obviously, Bonnie scene's definitely the best. It's the best scene of any animated film, according to me.
According to you.
Yeah. Yes. Honestly, I think that scene's the only reason why this was nominated for Best Picture. I feel like if they ended with them surviving the garbage scene, which, you know, great scene, But if that's how it ended, you know, will the Oscars be like, yeah, this should be nominated? I felt like that Bonnie scene probably got about a good 2/3 of the Oscar voters crying, and they were like, all right, Andy, why would you give up Woody? Okay, we'll give it to you guys. All right, you guys get a nomination. You guys earned it. That whole final scene's awesome, how he gives up the toys, and the very first scene of the entire film is the toys begging Andy to play with them, right? Like, they're literally trying this whole heist to take Andy's phone and put it in the toy bin so he'll notice the toys and maybe want to play with them. But obviously, you know, the dude's got a life and a cell phone. Why would he want to play with toys anymore? So he doesn't play with them, and that was their last shot. And so the final scene where he gives the toys to Bonnie and he plays with them one last time with her, I think that was a great callback to the first scene. That was his last time playing with them. And then he drives off, and as he's driving off, he says, see you guys, like his goodbye to them. And then Woody says, so long, partner. And that was like just the two of them. It was as if they were actually saying goodbye to each other, but you know, they can't because it's a freaking cowboy toy. And you know, Andy isn't crazy, so he doesn't talk. He can't talk to toys. So yeah, I thought the pacing for that end scene was amazing. Yeah, it's a good thing they don't make a Toy Story 4 and possibly ruin Woody's story arc, because I thought that was just really well done.
So I was just going to say, for my least favorite scene, it's just, I hate that scene where they're going down, I don't know what it is, like a metal thing at the junkyard when they're
about, a garbage chute.
Yeah, they're going down that, and he's like, Lotso's like, help me, and Woody goes down there and helps him get up, and then he helps him get over to this ladder to where, like, there's an off button, and Lotso's just like, ha, suckers. He's like, bet you're sorry you helped me now, and he just takes off. That part made me really bad. I was done with Lotso at that point.
Yeah. Any scene with Lotso, I cannot hate. I love Lotso.
That was the worst scene. Uh-huh. So I love how karma happened to him at the inn, and then that guy at the dump found him, and he ended up on the front of the truck.
That
was perfect for Lotso.
Yeah, his downfall is great. And I also thought what he did to them was great. Obviously, not from a moral perspective, but from a film perspective, I loved it. I thought his one-liner of, where's your child now? I thought that was great. Obviously, huge asshole. Would not, you know, have him babysit my children if I ever had children. You know, not the nicest guy in the world. But man, what a great villain. And that was such a great villain moment. Him looking down at all of them. They literally saved him twice. And he just goes, where is your kid now? Because he gets that moment in his eye. He was about to do it, and then he stops. And he just thinks in his head, if I just get rid of these guys for good, Sunnyside's back to being mine. It's as if nothing happened. I got to run this ship again. Like, he was like, they were my issue. Like, I can get rid of them right now. Like, he just got that little selfish moment. You know, Lotso, very selfish, got that little moment in his head. I love it. I thought that was great. Lotso, once again, great villain. My least favorite moment, which ironically is probably one of Andrew's, so we're kind of on different opinions here, was Spanish Buzz.
I love Spanish Buzz. Sorry, I love Spanish Buzz and his love towards
Jesse.
Towards Jesse, yeah.
No, like, fuck that guy.
No.
I want nothing to do with Spanish Buzz. And before putting the movie on, Andrea goes, oh, Lotso, he's the worst. I hate him. And I'm like, Andrea, he's one of the best villains. Calm down. You're going to like him. Movie starts. Clearly doesn't like Lotso, as you guys can tell from this podcast. But Spanish Buzz is about to start. As soon as Spanish Buzz begins, Andrea goes, oh, yay, I forgot. I love Spanish Buzz. And I just turned and looked at her, and I went, are you kidding me? The worst part of the film? And Andrea's like, that's it. Fucking love it. Oh, I hate it. It's so clear what this was. This was the writers looking down at the script and going, this is a pretty damn good script. And one of the writers going, hold on a second. Buzz Lightyear is supposed to be equally as crucial as Woody. First two films, Buzz Lightyear was one of the main characters. But this is all Woody. This is Woody going to Bonnie's house, escaping, being Andy's toy. This is Woody's story. Where's Buzz in this? The phrase just looking at this. What if we just, like, made him speak Spanish for 10 minutes? That, like, is that, like, would that make up for it? Like, you know, he doesn't need a story. We'll just make him speak Spanish. The kids will like it. We can sell a Spanish Buzz toy. That's all we need, right? Yeah, you know what? Yeah, you're right. Buzz is back in the story. He speaks Spanish for a few minutes. That's, you know what? It's all cool. Because I'll tell you right now, Spanish fucking Buzz did not need to be in this movie. It was a waste of a plot line. It just took up 10 minutes of the screen that didn't need anything. He added nothing to the movie. I just thought it was really stupid. But, you know, it's not even that big of a deal.
I think that it did actually make sense because his whole storyline is that they switch his settings, and obviously most toys do have, like, I know in the U.S. they have a Spanish setting.
Right.
So it kind of made sense. Like, they just fucked up and helped. Ooh, I don't know if we're allowed to say that in this podcast, but they just messed up and they held the button too long and it turned to Spanish. I don't know. Like, it kind of made sense.
I'm not saying the logic wasn't there. I'm just saying story-wise, the logic wasn't there. Yeah, there was always a Spanish setting. I'm not saying, oh, that's unlogical, a toy speaking Spanish. But it didn't add any purpose to the film. That was really my only thing. I just didn't really think it needed to be there. But, you know, the rest of the movie's great. Andrea, why do you think this film does or doesn't deserve to be nominated?
So I definitely think it actually, you're gonna be surprised, it did deserve to be nominated because the animation, like we said, was amazing. It was definitely top tier, and that's why it won for animation. And also, it just has so much going on in the plot overall. And everything turned out well, and the ending was phenomenal. So, yeah, I think overall it probably did deserve to be nominated for this category.
Yeah, don't quote me on this, but I am pretty sure this is the last animated film to ever be nominated for Best Picture at this moment. This is obviously the beginning of 2020, if anybody's listening back to this podcast, but since the 2019 Oscars, all the way from the 2011 Oscars, I believe this is the last animated nominee we're going to be getting. So yeah, it doesn't happen that often. I believe there's only 3 in the history. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure there's only been 3. The 3 being Beauty and the Beast, Up, and Toy Story 3. A good little group of films right there. I love all 3, so I'm fine with that. And yeah, I'm glad this nominated. Also, similar to what you said, just because I feel like animated films should be nominated more. I feel like every now and then we do get a solid gem, and it's good to appreciate that. And I do think this is one of them. This is my 3rd favorite Pixar film. The other 2 weren't nominated, so that is a shame. But I really do love this film. And yeah, I'm glad to see it get nominated here. So the reason why we put these 2 side by side is because they have 2 nominees that are similar. They were both nominated for adaptive screenplay and for music. So we could touch up on here. We'll do music first because it's really not that big of a deal, you know. Okay, oh, hold on. I don't want to diminish anything. They were both nominated for music. Toy Story 3 ended up winning that nomination. I have both of the songs here. If you want, I can play a little bit of it. And you can kind of tell me which song you thought was actually the better song. Maybe we can determine right now. Did Toy Story 3 deserve this award?
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, sounds good. All right, so here we go. We got the Toy Story 3 song, We Belong Together, award-winning song.
Don't you walk away. Don't you tell me that I don't care, 'cause I do. tell me I'm not the one. Don't you tell me I ain't no fun. Just tell me you love me like I love you.
All right, and then here is the 127 Hours song. There you go, you know, a little taster of both. I'll be honest with you, I think out of the two, I prefer the Toy Story 3 song. I'm just happy 127 Hours got a nominee here. I don't know if there wasn't much music competition, but I don't really even feel like this was an award-winning song, the If I Rise. It's a great song. I like it. I also love the importance that song had in the moment, where he's looking back at all these memories he had of his childhood and his life. His future. I thought that was great. Actually, it's mostly of his future, where he's thinking, quote unquote with the title, if I rise from this, if I can get out of this situation, I could be a father. Like, I could have a family. If I die right now, sure, I lived a great life, but I don't have a future. I would never know what it would be like to be a father. So I feel like that was such a great moment in that film. The moment's great. I don't know if the song is anything that spectacular. What about you, Andrew? What was your thoughts on the two songs?
I like both of them. I think that If I Rise is more like in the moment, and it's more of like a, it's supposed to be an uplifting song, but it's kind of sad. I don't know. Also, because if you see the visual with it, like Quentin said, you see him like looking to his future if like he's like becoming a father and all this stuff, and it was good, but I'm with you. I think Toy Story was probably a little bit better. It's a little obviously more uplifting and more fun in my opinion. Yep. So I guess I can see why Toy Story would have won.
And we didn't even get to the chorus. Mm-hmm. I should have jumped a minute ahead. I just don't want to keep it going, but yeah,
right,
we didn't even get to the chorus, and that's like the real uplifting part. A film that's not going to be in our nomination list because the only animated film is Toy Story 3, but the song from Tangled was also nominated, At Last I See the Light. Yeah. I might even say that should have won. I thought that was maybe an even better song than the Toy Story 3 one. But yeah, definitely between the two Disney films for me. I thought they were both great songs. So, you know, we'll give the edge to Toy Story 3 here, but how about adapted screenplay? So I was already kind of explaining it to you, Andrea. Adapted screenplay would be like what happens in the film. Mm-hmm. Kind of like the words on page. This is what is going to happen in this film, like the screenplay for it. Mm-hmm. So Toy Story 3 and 127 Hours were both nominated and lost to a film we'll eventually talk about. But in your opinion, between these two, which one was your favorite?
It's hard because now that you've kind of opened up my mind a little bit, Toy Story 3 did have a lot going on, like with their many different plots, but 127 Hours was based on a true story, and I'm so bad because I can't get off that whole kick of it was based on a true story, and I don't know, I'm just like fascinated with like them remaking that story. That's the whole reason I love true stories, is just the remaking of them is so interesting to me to see what they come up with. So I'm probably going to side with 127 Hours in this instance.
And you might be surprised, Andrew. I'm with you. I think 127 Hours has the better screenplay. I think Toy Story 3, they have a lot that happens, mm-hmm. and it's really great. But I also feel like the pacing is a bit odd. But 127 Hours, they were able to take such a simple idea and they made an hour and a half of it. And it didn't feel dragged. It didn't. I didn't look at this and went, oh, this is like a 30-minute movie. And they dragged it just to make money off of this. Like, I never got that vibe from it. It felt like they had a story to tell and they told it well. So I thought to make a script off of one moment in a guy's life so effectively, you know, I thought it was done really well. So I thought the screenplay was great. I'm with you on that. So finally, before we wrap this up, we will return to these two films in the final episode where we rank all the Best Picture nominees and get to some of the other big awards for our fake quote-unquote Oscar ceremony. But to wrap up these two films in a nice little bow, we both have Letterboxd accounts. That's kind of what inspired us to really love film here. And so on Letterboxd, they have a score from 0.5 star to 5 stars. And you can kind of go all the way there from 0.5, 1.5, whatever you want. So Andrea, if you had to rank these two films, what's your star ranking? Looking at the Letterboxd here, what would your star rankings be here? So if you want, I'll go first here. So for 127 hours, I'm going to give this, 4 out of 5 boulders. And then Toy Story 3, I can't help but love it. I'm going to give it 4.5 linking logs out of 5.
Wow. Yeah, that's good. It's really funny because my ranking is almost the same as yours. 127 hours. I was already thinking I'd give it 4 stars just because I love it. I don't think it's quite to the 5 yet. Like, I don't know. I feel like they'd still have to do something a little bit extra to make me want to give it 5 stars. So 4 out of 5. And then for Toy Story 3, I was actually thinking I'd probably give it 4 stars as well. I thought about 4.5, but Lotso really just kicked a star away. So.
Yeah, that darn teddy bear.
You just should blame it on Lotso.
Yeah, the final star, it was running up the garbage chute, is trying to stay alive. It's like, Lotso, push the button. And he's like, Andrea, where's your star now? Walks away.
Yeah. He's a jerk.
Oh, man. Lotso, you could have been a 5 out of 5, but Lotso screwed it up.
Yep.
Do you think that's what the Academy was thinking as well? Do you think the Academy was like, ah, we want to give this 5 stars, but Lotso.
Yeah.
You monster.
Yeah, he's just such a big jerk, and he made Creepy Baby think that her owner didn't want her, Daisy, I believe that was her name, didn't want her, and it really was just that she didn't want Lotso anymore, so he had to be a jerk and convince brainwashed Baby that she didn't want her either.
Yeah. Creepy naked baby, brainwashed.
Yeah, so many names. I'm sure after this podcast, you're going to tell me what the baby's name actually is.
Yeah, as soon as I stop recording, I'll tell you his name.
Oh, cool. It's a girl or a boy?
I don't know. Name. It's a toy. I don't care.
Okay.
It was naked, right? So what did you see?
Well, nothing, because it's a doll, and I don't make body parts on a doll.
Must be a girl, then. All right. Well, that is it for this episode. I'm not aware on what films we're going to be watching next, but, you'll figure it out soon. Anything else you want to say, Andrea?
No, this was a fun first podcast, and hopefully you guys enjoy it. Yeah, that's about it for me.
All right. Have a great day, guys.
Bye.